This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. For all those joining us live this morning at TSN1290.ca and via the iHeartRadio app, we say good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 3 hours of hockey talk for you on this Saturday morning. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Dave Minuke and Ezra Ginsberg. Producer Alex Albany does a great job behind the board. You can reach us here in studio at Illegal Curve is the best way to do it via Twitter. And of course, our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is illegalcurve.com. We have 3 hours of hockey talk for you. A lot of focus, of course, on your Winnipeg Jets, as it's a busy weekend for the Jets. Victorious last night at Bell MTS Place, defeating the Detroit Red Wings by a 4-2 margin. Going to be a day off for the Winnipeg Jets. No availability whatsoever for them as they finish off the back-to-backs. But a quick turnaround, of course, as they're back in action tomorrow afternoon, 5 o'clock puck drop, against the Anaheim Ducks. A struggling Anaheim Ducks team that we'll get to later on in the show. Without further ado, I say good morning to Ezra. I say good morning to David. 4-2 victory last night for the Winnipeg Jets. Dave, you were up in the press box. Ezra, you were viewing at home. I was in the seats. I would have to say from my vantage point, the Detroit Red Wings were the better of the two teams last night, and the Winnipeg Jets were victorious largely on the back of impressive play from Lauren Brossoit yet again.
Yeah, Brossoit was really solid, Drew, and good morning, boys. But I think you really saw how tired the Jets were in the third period. Anybody watching that game could see that the Jets were starting to tire out. And I think you could even see it towards the middle of that game, the middle frame. That's when the Red Wings got on the board. Luke Glendening had that shorthanded goal after Brian Little registered his 500th career point. But this is a tough stretch here for the Jets, and not just these three games in 4 days, but up until the All-Star break. And the Jets found a way to win. And, you know, the Red Wings are obviously a team that's not going to the playoffs this year. They haven't won many games in the last, you know, 10 or 11 games. But, you know, they showed a lot of fight. And you got to give the Jets a lot of credit, especially not knowing the future of Tyler Myers, right? And we talked about it. I mean, you have a big 7-4 win over the Colorado Avalanche without Nikolai Ehlers, without Dustin Byfuglien. And Sammy Niku, I thought, even though he struggled, I thought he was pretty solid on the back end for the Jets, and you know he coughed up the puck there a couple of times in the third period, but overall he was pretty solid. But you know, you get a win against a team you should beat, and that's all that really matters. Sometimes, you know, it's ugly, and I agree with you, Drew. At times the Red Wings controlled the pace of play and they were the better team, but you know, the Jets end up getting the win, and a lot of that had to do with, you know, getting out to that 3-0 lead. Mm-hmm. Gives you a nice little cushion, and we know the Red Wings don't score a lot of goals. So really, you know, Brian Little's goal, it was the big goal, not only because, you know, it was the go-ahead goal, but I thought that that goal really put the game away, and it was an ugly goal. I mean, Jonathan Bernier should probably make that stop, mm-hmm. and nothing against Little, but you know, maybe it deflects off of a defenseman or something like that. But, you know, the point is, you know, the Jets got two of these three wins. The game against Minnesota, even though they lost that game, the Wild got no shots in the third period. So
the game against Minnesota on Thursday night, the Jets didn't start skating until it was too late. They started really skating in the third period when they were already down by the 3-0 margin. Last night, you could see the Jets, to your point, as you mentioned, the Jets just tire out. By the third period, it looked like they didn't have much left in the tank at all. Paul Maurice sort of addressed it in his post-game comments. He wasn't an especially happy, victorious coach last night with how the team played, Dave. But, you know, they get the win, which is, as to your point, the important part. They beat an opponent that they're supposed to beat on home ice. But nothing about that game last night is going to be, you know, put into a time capsule as beauty. But I guess ultimately you don't get any marks for beauty wins in the NHL.
Nope. And our good buddy Scott Billick transcribed the Maurice comments that you're referencing. He goes, "I've got higher expectations for some of our players, and then I've got guys like Josh Morrissey blocking shots off turnovers that I'm pretty pleased with. A pretty good hockey player. He's a hard player, and I just thought it was a good win in the National Hockey League. How about that?" So the fact of the matter is, Drew, to your point, that you know, you put the 2 points in the standings bank, you move ahead, you tie Nashville for first, you've got two games in hand on them, and you just forget about the game, you take a rest today, and then you get ready for an Anaheim Ducks team that's 0-7-3 in their last 10 games. So Yeah, it wasn't a particularly good game for the Jets. And Brian Little, to your earlier comment about, or Ezzie's comment about, it was more of a lucky goal. I think Brian said after the game, his comment was, I think he went off about five different things before it actually went in. So clearly it wasn't like a top shelf, beautiful wrist shot that he put in. But the reality is it went in, and that's really all that matters.
Yeah, and you saw some penalties there towards the end of the second period. Brian Little took that tripping penalty, and then Ben Chiarot took that penalty in the third period. And those are the penalties, I think, that are taken by a tired team. And most teams are going to be tired. And obviously, if the Jets didn't win this game, they weren't going to use that as an excuse. But it was clearly evident that fatigue was catching up to the Jets, right? So they found a way to persevere through that. And I agree with you, Drew. Lauren Brossoit was very solid.
Mm-hmm.
And, the Luke Glendening goal was a very nice goal. It was an odd man rush.
Shorthanded, yeah.
And so you got to give the Red Wings credit. Both goals they scored, I thought, were deserved. And Brossoit made some huge saves. You remember Andreas Athanasio had the breakaway in the third period. He came up with a big stop. Jonathan Erickson hit a post. I mean, the Wings could have tied that game up. It goes back to what we said at the top of the show. I mean, give the Red Wings credit here. They were in Winnipeg a day before the Jets, so they had a lot of time to prepare for this game. They didn't play Thursday night.
Mm-hmm.
And even though this Wings team isn't very good, they're scrappy. And you look at Dylan Larkin. I mean, he's an all-star.
Yeah.
He's a great player. Jimmy Howard's going to go to the all-star game, but you know what I mean. Dylan Larkin is... he's an emerging superstar.
Yes, Dylan Larkin reminds me in his development path of Mark Scheifele, where maybe a little slow for his first couple years in the league, and then in that third season, something clicks. Because Larkin is almost a point-of-game player right now. He's going to shatter all of his career highs. As we talked about it on Wednesday show, as he with Ken Holland, Red Wings general manager. Dylan Larkin is a tremendously impressive player, and he's the linchpin to the future for the Detroit Red Wings.
Yeah, taking a couple of spots after Nikolaj Ehlers, if you remember correctly. So Larkin, you forget, is only 22 years old. I agree. He's a great player. The Red Wings' best player, and we talked about Athanasiu, lots of speed. Darren Helm, St. Andrews, Manitoba, had an assist on Glendening's goal. He had an excellent game. So this Wings team is still fighting. They're still scratching and clawing for whatever they can get here. But they know they're not going to be a playoff team. And all of the injuries they've suffered on the back end have contributed. But they also just aren't that talented, guys.
Yeah,
they really aren't.
They're thin. I mean, and that just comes with when you're in a rebuild, you're likely going to be thinner than a lot of the other teams you're playing, especially against a perceived upper echelon team like the Winnipeg Jets are. I mean, you look at last night's game, the puck luck just was on the Jets' side for a lot of it last night. I mean, you talk about Little's goal, which bounces off 14 different things. Wheeler's goal with, 1.8 seconds to go in the first period, where it's a great tip by Thomas Vanek. The problem, of course, being that Vanek plays for the Red Wings, and he tipped it past his own goalie. The Jets start with, a house on fire, scoring, 17 seconds in?
13.
13 seconds in, Brandon Tanev gets his 10th of the year. I mean, Brandon Tanev, where would this team be without the contributions of Brandon Tanev this year? He's been absolutely, he's been incredible night in, night out. Nobody expects anything offensively from him, but 10 goals for Brandon Tanev, he's going to shatter his career highs already.
Well, yeah, he already has in terms of goals. But, it's funny timing because Mike McIntyre from the Free Press wrote an article about Brandon Tanev and how he's playing his way out of the Winnipeg based on, because, of course, he's a UFA at the end of the season. So, and that article is on illegalcurve.com if you want to read it. But the fact is that...
good plug.
Yeah, no, I'd like to get those in every once in a while. But the fact is that, Brandon Tanev is, I tweeted out yesterday and people were loving it, but it's true. Like, when would you have ever expected him to be the first player to the 10-goal mark over guys like Wheeler, Little, Kopp, Lowry? The list goes on. I mean, there's a number of defensemen, obviously, I could list as well. But the fact of the matter is that it's just unbelievable that Tanev is the guy who is, fourth in terms of goals for the Jets or fifth. It's pretty impressive.
Yeah, and he has to be one of the most improved Jets. I think Ben Chiarot is in the conversation as well, but you remember back to a couple of years ago, the year before the Jets made the playoffs, the year they didn't make the playoffs, he was a healthy scratch quite often.
Yeah,
right.
And with the Moose.
And he played a little bit with the Moose. And last year he obviously played the entire year with the Jets. He had some injuries, but this is a guy who is a huge, huge part of this team. I mean, 10 goals, he had 8 goals last year. I mean, it's not just the goals, too, guys. I mean, this line of Perreault, Lowry, and Tanev, they're having a major impact almost every time they go out on the ice. And Matty Perreault was in on the forecheck on that first goal, and then Lowry made a pretty nifty pass there. But they've really clicked, and Tanev has become a very consistent player for Paul Maurice.
He's been tremendously consistent. Speaking of consistent, Josh Morrissey last night, 5 block shots, including one where he took, I don't know how he bounced back and stayed in the game after taking that big slap shot. It looked like off of his arm. I think that was in the first period there. Josh Morrissey was certainly, I thought, the most consistent Winnipeg Jets defenseman last night, and sacrificed his body a lot, and he certainly deserves a day off today after his yeoman effort against the Red Wings last night.
Yeah, no question. And it's funny because we were watching it, and at one point he blocks a shot off the back of his leg.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought to myself, okay, and then you see him just go down and he's just in pain. But it's like Josh Morrissey is like, it's a little bit like Tanev in that regard, is that he gets hit and you think to yourself, okay, well, he's done for a bit. And then he pops up and he's back in, not necessarily even the next shift. He's still skating that same shift. So Josh Morrissey, I think, like, night in, night out, just is the most consistent Jets defenseman. Well, I mean, all season in my mind. But I think, you know, especially knowing that the Jets are short Dustin Byfuglien, are now short Tyler Myers, you know that him and Jacob Trouba have to step up their game because they're going to be the guys who are the workhorses for this team. And we saw it yesterday. So to my mind, Josh Morrissey has really elevated his game. And I'm not particularly surprised, but I think it's absolutely necessary if you're the Jets because, you know, you really need him and Trouba to be your two best. And, I mean, Trouba played 24 minutes. Morrissey played 22 minutes yesterday.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that, and again, it, depending on Myers. Now, Myers, it sounds like it's not significant. Paul Maurice characterized it as a lower body injury and that it was a day-to-day injury. So we'll see how long that actually lasts. Maybe it's not further past Anaheim. Maybe it's just a couple games. We don't know. But the fact of the matter is that with him absent, with Byfuglien absent for still a few weeks, or I don't even know what day. It could be a month, sorry, still for Byfuglien.
Yeah, it's the 12th, and there's no update till what? At least the All-Star break on
Until
Byfuglien?
Around the All-Star break. Yeah, so we're still a few weeks away from that. But so you know that these guys are going to have to elevate their game because that just means that there's, you know, more ice time to be sucked up because, mm-hmm. you know, Paul Maurice obviously isn't as confident in his other pairings as he is in those two. So there's going to be a lot on their shoulders, and I suspect that they'll be happy to accept that responsibility.
Right, and when you talk about Tyler Myers, Dave, we're going to find out at some point here this weekend mm-hmm. how long Myers is going to be out, right? And it doesn't look like it's going to be long-term, but when you mention the ice time, I mean, Ben Sherratt is a guy that has consistently played 19, 20, 21 minutes a game alongside Dustin Byfuglien. I'm going to be really curious to see if Tyler Myers isn't able to go versus Anaheim, if he's not able to go against Vegas, who picks up that ice time? Because you've got Dmitry Kulikov now playing more. And
he's
I actually
up to
don't
20
think,
minutes last night.
Right, and I don't think Kulikov has looked particularly sharp. And Sammy Niku only played, I believe, 12 and a half minutes yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
So we'll have to see what happens here. But I would expect the pairs to probably stay the same. But I would probably expect more ice time for a guy like Sammy Niku.
12:51 for Niku last night, so you know, close to your 12 and a half, as you said. I thought the Jets, now I don't know if this is a function of the being tired, but I thought, especially in the third period, they had trouble getting out of their own zone. I don't know if it's a function of, you know, just new pairs playing together and the struggles of the back end or the tired, but certainly something I think for the Jets to clean up, especially because the Red Wings just took it to them constantly during that third period. The Jets had trouble getting it out of their own zone, getting any relief whatsoever, and they were they were certainly fortunate to hold on against the Detroit Red Wings team that was beginning to come in waves at them. That late third period penalty that the Red Wings took, the Cronwall penalty, I thought was what sort of ended the game almost at that point in time, because
mm-hmm.
that's 2 minutes. The Jets didn't score on the power play, of course, but it gave the Jets a breather. It gave the Jets an opportunity to sort of gather themselves after the Red Wings had been coming in waves at them in that third period, and then the Jets are able to get it into the empty net. Kyle Connor, of course, got it with a minute to go in the game, his third point of the game, to seal the victory for the Jets.
Yeah, and I thought Kyle Connor was pretty good yesterday. I thought he was pretty dangerous when he had the opportunity. He was skating for the most part. And again, you're reliant on these young guys who have some legs to get it going for your team. But, overall, again, like Drew, I think this team needs a Saturday off, and they're going to be happy that they've got Anaheim coming here on Sunday.
I agree with that. One player who's not on the score sheet last night, only 2 shots on goal, Patrick Laine. His struggles continue. We talk about Laine up next. How do the Jets get him out of his doldrums and become the sharpshooter and the goal scorer that we're used to seeing? That's up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the O'Legal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
It's always frustrating when you're not doing the right things, but there's still a lot of other things you can do well for the team, and that's kind of my focus now, that I try to rather to do those things and not worry about the goals, because eventually they'll come when you work hard and do those small things right. So that's kind of my mindset.
From earlier this week, that's Patrick Laine. His struggles continue. 3 goals in his last 20 games for the Winnipeg Jets. 5 assists to go with in those 20 games as well. So Patrick Laine, after a November in which he was the talk of the NHL, his December and so far into January, almost halfway through January, when did that happen? It has certainly been a struggle for the Winnipeg Jets winger. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment is brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and his team at Linden Market Dental Center. Dr. Rikus and his team provide modern and comprehensive dental care for the whole family. To make an appointment today, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. Patrick Laine, again, like I said, struggles continue. Nothing on the scoreboard last night. Goalless drought continues. I mean, he talks in that clip from a couple days ago about doing sort of the little things while he's not scoring, because he can still contribute to his team. From my perspective, I think the problem is that he's not really doing those little things very well. So you have a player right now who's a goal-scoring specialist who's not doing that, and that happens. You know, even great players go through goal-scoring droughts. This is probably longer than most great goal scorers go with a drought. But even the other parts of his game aren't there right now. So right now, Patrick Laine's contribution to the Winnipeg Jets is suffering, I would say, and that's probably the most polite way I can say it.
Right, and you know, speaking of Laine, Marad had a great article in The Athletic, and maybe we can tweet it out from the Twitter, IC Twitter account, guys, but you know, I thought that Marad really touched on some good points here, talking about Patrick Laine and talking about how, you know, he's not a zone entry monster and he needs to play with possession drivers, right? And it's obvious that Patrick Laine was having his most success with Kyle Connor on the other wing. Brian Little between Kyle Connor and Patrick Laine. Now, we all know that with Ehlers injured, Connor's up on the top line with Scheifele and Wheeler. And when you talk about who he should play with, I think Marat's right. I think, you know, Perreault is a possession driver. Maybe you put Perreault alongside Patrick Laine and Brian Little. But the point is here, guys, it's not always about who Laine's line mates are going to be. I mean, it has to come from within. And when you talk about, you know, Laine struggling, to me, and I mentioned this to you off air, Drew, I mean, it's not just about the goals. I mean, Patrick Laine, unless you've been living under a rock, is one of the best goal scorers in the NHL, if not the best, right? There's a guy named Alexander Ovechkin who you could probably say is still ahead of Patrick Laine. I'm not talking about the goal totals right now.
Yeah.
I'm talking about being
natural goal scoring ability.
Exactly, because Laine is going to score 50, and I think he's going to score 60 eventually. You forget he's only 21 years old, right? So when you're talking about Patrick Laine, I think it's what he's doing in the defensive zone and his overall effort. At times, Drew, Laine looks disinterested. It looks like there isn't an urgency to his game.
Casual, cavalier.
Right.
I mean, that, you know, sort of, and that's sort of his persona when you talk to him or when you hear him interviewed. He's very laissez-faire, and that comes with probably being 20 years old in some regards, that nothing really bothers him, at least outwardly, and that's maybe not a bad thing, that he sort of, you know, can be cool. But there's a fine line between being cool and being, and just being sort of, not lazy, but like lackadaisical.
Right, and Drew, I would not call Patrick Laine lazy.
I wouldn't call anybody in the NHL for the most part lazy.
I'm saying that at times in his own zone, on the back check, or even on the forecheck, I think there leaves more to be desired. And I'm as big of a fan as Laine as anybody. I mean, this is the future of the Winnipeg Jets. They're going to build their franchise around Laine for the next 15 years. So I'm not saying that he's not a great goal scorer and he's not a great player and a great person, but we have to call it like we see it. And he's just not the same player that we saw in November. And I think it is a little bit mental, and I think it is starting to get to him not scoring goals, because we know that Laine, Dave, for him to feel like he's really having an impact on the game, he has to be scoring, whether that's at 5-on-5 or on the power play. But when you're watching him away from the puck at times,
and even with the puck in his own zone,
yep,
there's a lot that you want to see. There's a lot more that you need to see. Jeremy Roenick and Mike Milbury spoke about this on the NHL on NBC Sports Network broadcast on Thursday night. That game was broadcast in the States, the Jets Wild game, and they spoke about Line A and his effort. Here's what they had to say.
When you're in a slump like Patrick is right now, you have to go inside the play. And when I say inside the play, you have to get inside the circles, get closer to that paint, because sometimes a shot's going to go off you. It's going to go off your skate. It's going to deflect in a weird way, and it probably you'll get a dirty goal. Dirty goals and ugly goals sometimes give you confidence. But when he's on the outside waiting for somebody to give him a perfect pass so he can use that lethal shot of his, that's going to happen, what, once or twice a game? You have to be able to get on your horse and get into those scoring areas and get into those areas where something strange can happen.
That's Jeremy Roenick talking about Patrick Laine and just the effort as part of that clip. There's also Mike Milbury showing some video where Laine just isn't, especially in his own zone, he's just casual with the puck, and it leads to a turnover. And we saw it, I think it was in the first period, it was a good opportunity that Connor Hellebuck was able to make the save on, but it came purely off of Line A being too casual in the Jets' own zone, leading to a Minnesota chance. That's the part that has to be cleaned up, because you're right, the goals may come, and they probably will come, but you can't be casual, because the players you're playing against are just too good for you to be casual, Dave.
No, absolutely. And that's a big factor, is what you're doing either with when you have the puck in the defensive zone or what you're doing when you don't have possession of the puck. And I think those are things that will not necessarily even like matter. Like, you have to do things that you're going to make your teammates happy with your level of play, because if your teammates see you doing, you know, exhibiting that type of play, they're not going to be particularly pleased to be on your line because you're killing them. You're becoming an anchor mm-hmm. against them. Now, you know, Patrick Laine, as, you know, young players can be, is a bit of a streaky scorer. And at first, I was looking at the numbers yesterday because him and Mark Scheifele have now tied each other with goals. And I was curious to see how they've kind of come to that point where they both have 24. And really, in the first 10 games, Laine had 3 goals. In his next 20, he had 18. Mm-hmm. And in his last 13 games, he's had 3 more. So to obviously to get him to 24. So in that 20-game stretch, as he referenced earlier, partly in November and you know, obviously over a couple other months, the fact of the matter is that he scored 18 goals in 20 games. I mean, that's a pretty incredible number. Obviously, the St. Louis game has a big factor in that because that was the 5-goal game. But the fact of the matter is, like as he said, it's not a function of scoring because this guy has oodles of talent. He's going to get the goals. It's a function of what are you going to do with the puck? What can you do when you're not with the puck? Are you properly positioned? And if you're doing those things, if you're doing those little things the right way, even if you're not scoring, then you're at least contributing in a positive manner to your team.
And I think we all agree that Patrick Laine is going to bust out of this slump. Not only is he going to bust out of this slump and score a lot of goals, he's going to start to play a better overall game. But
You'd hope so.
Dave just mentioned Mark Scheifele, and you wonder, and they've tried this a little bit, but if they like Laine on the left side, you wonder if it's just a matter of time before you see Laine, Scheifele, and Wheeler. Because and it goes back to what we were talking about in Marat's article, that he's not a play driver and he's not a zone entry wizard. And he talks about Laine's underrated playmaking ability. And we know that Scheifele can shoot the puck. So as far as I'm concerned, if I'm Paul Maurice, I have to be thinking about putting Laine up on that top line.
Well, you know, so in the article that Marat references, he talks about, you know, the Laine and his performance with various line mates. And the one that he mentions as having played well together, albeit in not a lot of time, only 94 minutes of ice time at 5-on-5, was Laine on the right side with Perreault and Little. That we saw that line very briefly, I believe, yesterday mm-hmm. when Paul Maurice reunited the TLC line and moved Perreault up with Laine and Little. So I have a two-part question for you guys. One, do you prefer Laine on the left side or the right side? And then secondly, do you think it's time to put the TLC line back together, move Perreault up with Little and Laine, and maybe move Roslovic back down with the guys like Appleton and Lemieux?
Yeah, it's really tough to say.
Andrew Kopp, of course, as well.
Yeah, and it's tough to say because
he's the TLC.
Yeah, TLC, TLP. Yeah, when Nick Ehlers is in the lineup, though, Drew,
yeah,
he's going to be on one of those top two lines on the left side, right? I mean, Nick Ehlers has played a little bit on the right side. So for me, you're talking about what you're going to do short-term versus long-term, right? Because I think when Nikolai Ehlers is in the lineup and healthy, I think he goes on the top line
with Scheifele and Wheeler.
And then I really liked Connor Little and Laine. Now Ehlers is out of the lineup. Yeah, sure, try Perreault with Little and Laine. You mentioned we've seen it a little bit here, and obviously the TLP line has been playing really well. They connected on the Jets' first goal yesterday, but I think you're going to have to see some movement here because you have to get Patty Laine going. I mean, they have some important games coming up here before the All-Star break. He's struggling. And that line is not working right now. So I have no problem with Perreault. And as far as left side versus right side, I would probably say I prefer him on his off wing, left side. And that's Paul Maurice has made that clear that he likes Laine on the left.
Dave?
My thought is that fourth line will play about 4 minutes a game if it's Roslovic, Appleton, and Lemieux. So, I personally like that. I don't like them only playing 4 minutes, but I like that combination because I think Perreault, to the point that people have made throughout his career, but specifically here in the last couple of seasons, that Perreault really just makes any line he's on better. Mm-hmm. So I think if you can add two veterans onto that line to play, and like as he said, this is just a short-term solution because the reality is Nicky Lierza will be back and right. He'll be your left side, second line winger.
Even in the short term, if that line clicks and all of a sudden you find magic where you've been struggling for much of the last couple seasons to find really a great line for Patrick Laine, maybe 94 minutes of ice time together isn't a long time at 5-on-5, and they've had success, at least based on, they've had 54.8% of the shot attempts when Perreault, Little, and Laine have been together, and they've outscored their opponents 6-3. So it's only just under 100 minutes of ice time, but why not?
No, that's the whole point. If you can find a working combination, and like you guys were talking about it, the fact is that you want to just get guys going, and you need to get them feeling good about their game. And a lot of small things can happen to your game when you're feeling good in other aspects, right? So I think to the greater point of getting Patrick Laine going, it's not just about the goal scoring as we've talked about throughout this segment. It's about him getting and doing the other little things. Well, Brian Little is one of the most responsible players defensively that you're going to find on this team specifically. But, pretty much he's just a very, very responsible defensive center. And I think, again, Matthew Perreault is another responsible type of forward. So I think those types of traits can be passed on and kind of ingrained in a younger player because you really just try and mold yourself. And I think a little bit more of a freewheeling style might not necessarily be beneficial to him. So I think if you have those two veterans on a line with Patrick Laine, it's only going to be beneficial for his play.
When we come back, Jeff Hamilton from the Winnipeg Free Press is going to join us. We'll talk more about the Jets, more about Laine, and of course the upcoming games against Anaheim and Vegas. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Bottom of the hour, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live here on TSN Radio 1290. We have a great day of NFL football coming up for you later on. Both of the divisional final games. We have the Chiefs and the Colts this afternoon, followed by the Rams and the Cowboys later on tonight. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Dave Minuk and Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter. That's the best way to reach us here in studio, at Illegal Curve. And, of course, our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From the Winnipeg Free Press, he's a good friend of ours. We're pleased to welcome back to the program Jeff Hamilton. Jeffrey, good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Gentlemen, good morning. Thanks for having me.
Our pleasure, Jeff. We were just, not sure if you were tuned in or not, but we were just spending the last segment sort of talking about Patrick Laine and his struggles, as obviously it's now been 20 games where he's only got 3 goals, which are not Patrick Laine-like numbers, and his play in his own zone has left a lot to be desired. At this point in time, Jeff, who would you play Patrick Laine with to maybe try and get him out of the doldrums that he's in?
It's a good question because, and really one kind of hard to answer because this year, I mean, he's been with a ton of different guys, but I mean, I think I follow the pack a little bit in the sense of who's the guy that the Jets seem to lean on to get the most out of besides Blake Wheeler. And that's Matthew Perreault. I mean, it seems to be one of those things where if you need a guy to get going, number 85 is the guy that usually gets it done. I mean, whether it's driving possession or whatnot, and I think that's what Patrick Laine needs is a driver on his line, someone that will help him sustain offensive zone time and give him that opportunity. Because as we've seen from Patrick Laine, I mean, he's not the quickest guy. He's not the guy who's gonna you know, drive that possession and you know, make his line mates better, he needs someone to kind of complement him. And it just seems the challenge right now isn't the power play. It's obviously 5-on-5. It needs the uptick for his game. He just hasn't been able to do that. Whether Brian Little's that guy, I mean, he seems to be the one that's expected to lead that charge. But you know, to answer your question, I think everyone's kind of interested, or a lot of people are interested in what Matthew Perreault could possibly do. But just someone that can get him into open space. But I mean, that's the other thing. I mean, it shouldn't just be somebody else that gets his game going. He's obviously going to have to get his own game going. So that includes moving his feet, kind of getting more used to the speed of the game. And it's funny though, because we're talking about a guy in his third season, and you know, he's still leading the Jets with goals, and he's tied with Mark Scheifele right now, I believe. But you know, this guy is just not enough. And but again, to answer your question, I'd say Matthew Perreault would probably be the guy that you think could maybe add that spark.
Hammer, last night, Laurent Brossoit made 33 saves, picks up his 9th win of the season against only one loss, and he actually came in relief of Connor Hellebuyck, so he's actually undefeated when he's starting games. And we know that his contract is maybe one of the best contracts in the entire league, 1 year, $650,000. Can the Jets afford to lose Laurent Brossoit, because he's arguably the best backup goaltender they've ever had?
Yeah, they can afford to lose him. I mean, they have a guy who was the runner-up for the Vezina Trophy in Connor Hellebuyck, and yes, Connor Hellebuyck has regressed, but he is the future of this team. I mean, and it's a bright-looking future. I mean, we're looking at a bit of a regression, obviously, from last season to this season, but the Jets are still picking the race of the Central Division. They're ahead of their pace from last season, if you can believe that. I mean, that just sounds crazy to me, but they are. And, you know, this guy, you know, Connor Hellebuyck's obviously not putting up the same numbers that they was putting up last year. And yes, Laurent Brossoit's stats are quite impressive, but Laurent Brossoit's also never played never started more than 14 games in a season. And that came last year in a dismal year with the Edmonton Oilers. Now, don't get me wrong, I'm not trying to downplay or downplay what he's been able to do this season. It's been, you know, it's been very impressive, and it seems like, you know, they're not just wins, but they're big wins. I mean, including last night's game. I mean, without Laurent Brossoit, I mean, I don't know if the Jets walk away with that victory against a lowly Detroit Red Wings team. But you know, to suggest or to ponder whether or not the Jets could, you know, can get away with not. I mean, I think you're going to have to see that. I mean, I think that Laurent Brossoit is playing himself like we've seen for a couple different guys. You know, first one comes to my mind is Scott Darling. Is just someone who's able to kind of put a sample size, all that small, into one season and probably turn it into a contract. Now, I don't know if that, you know, depending on what happens the rest of the season here, and I think we're going to see more of Laurent Brossoit just because of the Jets' schedule. But, you know, if he can maintain some of these numbers, it's not going to be, it's not necessarily going to be a question of can they afford to lose him. It's going to be a question of can they afford to keep him. So it will be interesting, and you know, what an impressive story for the 25-year-old. But certainly, I mean, when it comes down to it, you can't be investing a ton of money into your goaltending, and you already obviously have $6+ million a year in Connor Hellebuyck. So you don't really have a lot of money, particularly if you're the Jets and all the contracts you're going to have to sign, to really be able to pay any more than what they're paying him right now.
You know, Jeff, Paul Maurice is not a coach known for calling his players out in the media or his post-game scrums. Last night was probably as close as we've come to see him do that. What did you think about his comments about his team yesterday?
Well, I don't know if you recall, but I was the one that was kind of gave him the opportunity to do that. I mean, he kind of came to the mic and he looked visibly disappointed or upset or whatever it was. And the comment that stuck out to me was, you know, he was kind of praising some of the older guys that were logging bigger minutes and you know, and was impressed by their game and made a couple of these little subtle things. You just knew it looked like he wanted to say something. So I asked the question. I said, Paul, I apologize if I'm reading between the lines incorrectly, but you know, it seems like you're disappointed about the result despite the fact that you guys won. And I don't know why he went on this Josh Morrissey thing. I mean, it looked like he just kind of gave himself a couple, I don't know if Josh Morrissey kind of popped into his mind to give him a little bit of praise, but yeah, he seemed like he was disappointed with some of the younger guys. And this is just speculation to me, but I think he wasn't all that impressed with the bottom six on forwards. I think he wanted more effort from guys who, what I think, and again, this is pure speculation, is he probably deals with, you know, a handful of conversations every week from guys in the bottom six, and I don't really want to name names, but, you know, guys like Brendan Lemieux and Andrew Kopp and guys that are, you know, have done some good things for the Jets, but, you know, are battling more ice time. And he kind of seemed to take exception last night to some of the efforts. And again, he didn't name anybody, but he did throw out a couple hints of by age and guys that aren't logging a ton of ice time. So read between the lines on that. I thought it was a sloppy game. So, you know, you need to, I think the expectations are obviously much higher with this team. And when you play a game so tight against a Detroit club that isn't all that great, you know, you do win the game, but I don't know if it was necessarily the result or a step in the right direction that Paul Maurice was expecting.
Hammer, do you think there's a chance that we see Nick Petan tomorrow versus Anaheim?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, kind of forget about Nick Petan just because he hasn't really had that opportunity. And you know, I definitely think that, is there a chance? Yeah, but, you know, and it would be great to kind of see him and see how he develops, because this is the point of the season right now where you see guys like Jack Rozovic, you see guys particularly on defense now with the injuries. You know, these are opportunities that guys are just kind of handing them to their lap. And with Nick Ehlers out, you know, I think everybody was kind of questioning, well, what's it going to take to get Nick Petan in the lineup if a guy like Nick Ehlers goes and, you know, he's not one of the guys that's being tapped on the shoulder. You know, they've obviously injected Mason Appleton in the lineup. They're like Brendan Lemieux's game right now. And you wonder, you know, where does Nick Petan fit? Well, I don't know if he fits on that fourth line. But, you know, he gets an opening on that one of the top six lines, and he's not the guy. So maybe, but I wouldn't hold my breath for now.
Jeff Hamilton is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Jeff, of course, covers the Jets for the Winnipeg Free Press. Jeff, you know, about just over 6 weeks away from the NHL trade deadline, pick a position. Which one do the Jets need to fill most ahead of the trade deadline?
Center. So, I mean, it's the same recipe as last season. I mean, I wouldn't rule it out, but it just seemed like with picking up Paul Stastny, no one knew about it. No one even thought about it because he just didn't seem like the kind of guy who would be on his way out. And sure enough, it was, you know, quite an impressive pickup by Kevin Cheveldayoff and certainly worked. I mean, they ignited that second line. I know they went a little bit drier in the playoffs, but Paul Stastny was a driver. They need a playmaking centerman and they need one that is simply going to be a rental. So, to me, I think there's obviously other areas. I think they got plenty of support on the wings. Brian Little has played pretty good at points this season, but I think if you're gonna do a long playoff run, you're gonna probably want him deeper in your depth chart besides, you know, the number two centerman. So that's probably the hole that I would probably suggest, and what many people would suggest. Maybe some depth on defense, but I think they have that. It's just with this rash of injuries, you know, it's a prime example. If you lose one or two guys, you know, you're kind of really digging deep into that depth pool. So maybe a veteran guy, not an expensive piece, but maybe somebody who could play in and out of the lineup in a pinch. Those would probably be the two areas. I think those are the two areas that every contending team is looking to have, one that isn't loaded down the middle. So, certainly that number two center hole, again, no disrespect to Brian Little, but I think what you saw last year with Paul Stastny was really the ticket for this team to get as far as they did.
Hammer, what did you think of Sammy Niku's game last night?
I thought it was okay. I think he was sheltered a little bit. I mean, he's a little bit freewheeling, right? So there was that one give up that I think he gave up that breakaway. And, I thought he was a little bit rusty at the beginning, which is obviously understandable just given he hadn't played for 2.5 weeks. So, I see that guy out there and yeah, it shows a lot of promise. I mean, this is kind of the future NHL, smaller. I mean, he's never going to be the big guy, obviously. And, it's a little bit contradictory of what we see from this big, you know, fast Jets team. But I thought he was comfortable. You know, I think he's a guy who has a lot of creativity to offer. I think there's certainly the offensive side on the blue line that, you know, when he does get more comfortable with this league and matures a little bit, that will come out even more. And, you know, he was sheltered. I don't think he logged a ton of minutes last night, but certainly was able to get the Jets to win. I thought the defense in general and the way Paul Maurice kind of summed it up is three block shots, I'll take it. So I did think he contributed a little bit there, but again, I mean, he hadn't played for 2.5 weeks, so can't really expect too much from a guy who hasn't played in that long.
Jeff, got to talk about Brandon Tanev. Hit career highs, tied his career high in points, has 10 goals. And if I would have told you at the beginning of the season that Brandon Tanev would hit the 10-goal mark before Blake Wheeler, Matthew Perreault, Brian Little, you'd think I was crazy. Your colleague Mike McIntyre wrote an article fortuitously for the Free Press yesterday about Tanev playing himself out of town because he's playing so well. But just what has his impact been on this Jets team?
Just speed. I mean, he epitomizes really what the Jets game is, and you know, you hear about quickness and speed. It's not always about how fast somebody is, and certainly Brandon Tanev is super fast, but he's also quick on the puck. He just seems like he's dialed in, and he's you know, his hockey IQ is there, and he's kind of an example of if you play the system the Jets expect to play, that you're going to get rewarded. I mean, he's not, you know, it was a pretty goal last night and he went top shelf, but he's not a guy that's going to dangle three or four guys and then deek the goalie. He's a guy who's going to, you know, annoy you in the offensive zone for 30, 40 seconds and be that guy that pounces on the puck when, you know, because he's in the right place at the right time. And, to me, I think he reminds me a lot of Andrew Kopp. I mean, he is quicker than Andrew Kopp, but he actually, you know, he buries his opportunities. I don't think anyone gets robbed more on the Jets than Andrew Kopp in the previous few years. And I think, you know, it's great, but it really is the truth. I mean, when you look at all the contracts the Jets, the more high profile contracts the Jets need to pay over this next year and a bit, you know, you're kind of forgetting about Brandon Tanev, and it will be difficult to sign him, but at the same time, if you can get him for, you know, he's not playing himself into a, you know, $4 or $5 million a year contract, but he's certainly certainly playing himself into that $2 million area section. And, you know, I know the Jets would want to have to maintain him and keep that, consistency with the line with Lowry and you know, Kopp and Perreault now, but, it will be tough. And just the way the season's going for him, I mean, he's, like you said, he's having a career year.
Jeff Hamilton covers the Winnipeg Free Press. Pardon me, covers the Winnipeg Jets for the Winnipeg Free Press. I'll be okay. Jeff, thanks for joining us this morning, buddy. We'll see you at the rink tomorrow.
Hey, guys. Always a pleasure. See you tomorrow.
Take care, Jeff. When we come back, we discuss Josh Morrissey, the impact he's having on the Jets, and where does he stand among the NHL's top defensemen. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
Unbelievable patience in the neutral zone from Blake Wheeler as he has speed and numbers. It's a 2-on-1 in tight, but he recognizes that he's going to get caught. So he slows down. He lets the wave pass him. Going to look at Ken Hitchcock and his Oilers, who were able to pull an overtime win out of this building back on October 16th from a win. Winning goal from Darnell Nurse, while Josh Morrissey, the defenseman, has something to say about that as he gets a huge goal here off of a rush.
Josh Morrissey scoring for the Winnipeg Jets in overtime, if you recall. That was to beat the Oilers a few weeks back, maybe even a couple months ago at this point in time. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, we're live here on TSN Radio 1290. This segment of the show is brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. Josh Morrissey, we know how important he's been here in Winnipeg. The fact we get to watch him day in and day out, he's certainly been a linchpin on the Jets defense and the linchpin on the left side of the Jets defense. about to shatter all of his previous career highs. He's got 25 points already this year. His previous career high was 26. So we're looking at a guy who's going to be a 40-point, maybe even upwards close to a 50-point defenseman this year. Getting a lot of praise from some other sources. Eric DeHatchik, a very good friend of ours. He's with, of course, TheAthletic.com now, talking about the potential upcoming 2020 World Cup of Hockey Team Canada. And Eric DeHatchik has Josh Morrissey on that team. Is Morrissey now maybe beginning to get the respect he deserves from around the NHL as being one of the best young defensemen and one of the best young Canadian defensemen and maybe a future international hockey stalwart for Team Canada on the blue line?
Yeah, I think he is, and I think it started last year, right? Because the Jets finished second overall in the league. They went to the Western Conference Final, and you know, spectators around the NHL looked at Josh Morrissey and Jacob Trouba, and they watched these guys, and they said, this is a legitimate shutdown top pair in the NHL. And you can put that top pair up against any team's top lines. And, you know, you mentioned that, you know, Josh Morrissey was on Eric Duhatchik's Team Canada roster for the 2020 World Cup. And, you know, you remember Josh Morrissey was a big part of those Canadian World Junior teams.
Mm-hmm.
And so he has the history with Hockey Canada, and I absolutely think that he can make that team, not just in 2020, but, you know, every 4 years for, you know, the next, let's say, 12 years. I mean, he's still relatively young, right? And so when you're talking about Morrissey, and I thought that this would be interesting to bring up because, guys, I think when you're talking about Dustin Byfuglien, everybody knows that he's a top 10 offensive NHL defenseman, right? And he's put up big numbers year after year. His numbers suffered a little bit this year, but you know, it's unfortunate that he got injured because he was nearly a point per game. But I think there's a strong argument to be made that Josh Morrissey is a top 20 NHL defenseman, maybe even top 10. I don't think he's yet at that top 5 level, because as far as I'm concerned, Erik Karlsson, Drew Doughty, Seth Jones, Victor Hedman, I'd throw P.K. Subban in there. I mean, those are my top 5 NHL defensemen. I think you could make an argument that Mark Giordano is in there. But when you're talking about kind of that second tier of defensemen, right, guys like Cam Fowler, John Klingberg, Morgan Riley, Alex Pietrangelo, I mean, I think Josh Morrissey is in that conversation. And, you know, maybe I'm biased because I live here in Winnipeg and I get to watch Josh Morrissey, but I think he is a top 10 NHL defenseman, and you know, he's averaging, you know, 22, 23, 24 minutes. He plays big minutes against the other team's top lines, and you've started to see that offensive game now come around, Dave. And you know, you mentioned, you know, Morrissey is on pace for just under 50 points.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously, you know, when you talk about guys like Morgan Riley and John Klingberg, these are 60, 70 point guys. Morrissey's getting there, right? And I don't think Morrissey's ever going to be, you know, an 80-point guy like Erik Karlsson or a Brent Burns, but I could absolutely see him being a 45 to 50-point guy year after year. And for a defenseman, that's going to put him amongst the top 20, right?
Yeah.
So I just think it's an interesting argument because, and again, this is just my opinion, guys, and you could argue this, but I think there's no doubt that he's a top 20 defenseman. I mean, if you look at all 31 teams in the league, I think, you know, he's if not a number one defenseman, he's probably going to be on a number two defenseman on many of those teams. And sure, a team like Nashville that has guys like Roman Josi, we mentioned Subban, Matthias Ekholm, it's going to be tough for Morrissey to be considered the top defenseman or even second best defenseman on that team. But the majority of NHL teams would love to have Morrissey as their top guy.
Along those same lines then, Dave, mm-hmm. Should Josh Morrissey be playing more for the Winnipeg Jets? Among defensemen in the NHL, Josh Morrissey averages even strength ice time per game, 18 minutes and 20 seconds. Even strength.
Mm-hmm.
That puts him 58th among NHL defensemen. Should the Jets be deploying him more? Should he be playing more given that he's the clear-cut number one left-side defenseman for the Winnipeg Jets? Do they need to... Is he a horse and the Jets need to ride him as such in terms of time on ice?
Well, I suspect those numbers are going to be skewed over the next few days, games, especially based on the fact that we don't, again, like I said earlier, we don't know what Tyler Myers' status is and how long he's going to be out for. But, I mean, yeah, I mean, obviously Josh Morrissey is a player that you're going to be relying upon and you want to, you know, get him into minutes that and Paul Maurice talks about this all the time. I mean, there's a fine balancing act. You've got guys who are all wanting big minutes, and when a guy goes down, each one of these guys wants to take on that opportunity. So I suspect he's had that conversation with every single defenseman in his room separately, obviously saying, oh, hey, I'm willing to take more time. I can take on more time. So, you know, it's a balancing act. You've got to get a certain, you've got to get everybody into the lineup. You've got to get them all feeling good. At least you think you do, but, and that would be the hope. So, yeah, I think that they could rely upon Josh Morrissey more? For sure. Of course they do. I think they can, but I mean, again, it's a function of when, especially when the lineup is healthy and you've got Dustin Byfuglien, you've got, you know, his pairing, and you know, you've got the Kulikov and Myers pairing. I just think it's just a very fine balancing act to try and find all those minutes for all these like really workhorse defensemen who are in your lineup. But I mean, if you ask me if I think Josh Morrissey, I mean, I said it earlier, I think he's the most consistent player for this Jets team by far. I think his play has been superb, on the back end for Winnipeg. So yeah, no, I mean, obviously you'd like to see him get more minutes, I think.
Yeah. And I don't think a lot of people realize this, but coaches in the NHL and coaches at every level, I mean, they keep a close eye on ice time.
Mm-hmm.
Like a really close eye.
They time each shift. Each shift is timed on the bench.
Right, but not even shift length, Drew. I'm talking about the amount guys are playing from mm-hmm. game to game,
yeah,
right? Especially in a 3-game and 4-night stretch.
Sure.
Right? So, I mean, when you're talking about, you know, the top ice time leaders, you're talking about Drew Doughty. You're talking about Ryan Suter, who we just saw Thursday night. You're talking about Chris Letang, Seth Jones, guys like that, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, these are all older players, and I think that's something to factor in as well. When you're talking about Doughty and Suter, Suter's 33 years old. Doughty is, what, 28, 29 years old. I mean, so these players are much older than Josh Morrissey, and Morrissey is not that far behind, right? He's just under 23 minutes a game, I believe, on the season.
In terms of total time on ice?
Right.
In terms of total time on ice per game, he's at 22.45
right.
per game.
So just under,
which is 37th among NHL defensemen.
Well, but if you think about it, I mean, if you take all 31 teams' top pairs, that's 62 defensemen.
Yeah.
So he's getting top pairing ice time, right? I mean,
sure.
It's on the lower end. But, I mean, I think a factor there is he doesn't play on the first power play.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes he doesn't play on the second power play, right? Because the Jets go with, when Buff is healthy, the Jets go with Buff and four forwards, and then Trouba is the point man on the second power play unit. Sometimes Morrissey gets out there on the power play, Drew, but to Dave's point, with Buff out of the lineup, yeah, sure, Morrissey's going to get a little bit more power play time, but I think gone are the days, guys, where you have to ride your top defensemen and give them, you know, 27, 28 minutes. If the game needs that,
yeah.
And you mentioned it. I mean, it's.
And given that it's mid-January and the
right.
Jets are in a good spot,
right.
they probably don't need that until
right.
April,
right.
May.
So I think, you know, Morrissey at 22, 22 and a half minutes a game is probably where he needs to be. But going back to what I said, I mean,
yeah.
I just love watching the guy play. Maybe it's because I'm a former defenseman, but I think, you know,
yeah.
if you look at his
the comparables between you and Josh Morrissey are just on point.
Yeah.
Well, as he was a first-round pick.
I could.
Of the Maccabi Jewish Hockey League.
Right.
Yeah.
I wish. But the way he plays the game. And I don't care. I mean, if people think that I'm, you know, I'm fanboying too much on Josh Morrissey, because his development from the Western Hockey League to the Manitoba Moose to the Winnipeg Jets, I mean, he has turned into such a great defenseman. It's just been really fun to watch, because what he's doing out there right now, I mean, he's shutting down other teams' top players, and he's also putting the puck in the net as well.
Well, you know, it might be a fun exercise to do over the next week or so to actually go team by team and say, you know, where does Josh Morrissey rank among all the teams in the defenseman corps that they have? It would take obviously more than just a segment, but it might be worth doing in the next couple weeks as the Jets have their player break and then the All-Star game, and sort of after this week, the schedule dries up for a little while. When we come back, Greg Wyshynski of ESPN.com is going to join us. We'll talk to him about his series about hockey in Alabama, of all places, and look around the NHL with Greg. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Hour number two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN Radio 1290. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Dave Minuk and Ezra Ginsberg. You can reach us in studio via Twitter, at Illegal Curve is the best way to do so. And, of course, our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From ESPN.com, we're pleased to be joined by Greg Wyshynski. Greg, good morning, and thanks for joining us.
Good morning, boys. I am at a under 8 girls soccer game currently, not covering it for ESPN. My daughter's in it. So if you hear screams of agony, it is because I'm at a youth sports event.
Very well. We appreciate you joining us, Greg, and making time for us. And best of luck to your daughter, of course, as she participates in that high-quality athletic contest. Greg, you had a great series of articles on ESPN.com earlier this week about hockey in a non-traditional market, and that non-traditional market happens to be Alabama, and that's certainly not the place that jumps to mind when you're thinking about hockey. But you sort of went deep into hockey in Alabama, focusing on two SPHL, Southern Professional Hockey League teams in both Huntsville, Alabama and Birmingham, Alabama, and then also spent some time on one of the sort of an underrated NCAA Division I hockey program, that being Alabama Huntsville. What surprised you most when you sort of took this deep dive into hockey in Alabama?
Well, it was a real fun story to report because, like you said, it's not something that a lot of us are cognizant of. But my biggest takeaways from it were, in Huntsville in particular, city with a lot of transient people, let's say, people that come in to work at military bases, they come in to work in the aerospace business there, building and stuff. And so the Huntsville games have become a de facto hockey bar. Like, all of the people come to those games wearing their jerseys from other cities, Boston, Washington, Chicago, wherever. It's the only place in town where they can kind of be amongst their people. So those games are really well attended because it's the place where hockey people come to watch hockey stuff, you know? And then the other thing that I found fascinating was the fact that you had these SPHL teams. The SPHL has long been sort of the fighting league. You know, it's a place where if you go on YouTube, you can go down the rabbit hole and find all these line brawls and things like that. They were worried, both those teams, that when fighting declined, as it has at every level of hockey, that people would stop coming to the games. You literally had a situation where, people would the executives of the teams and ask, you know, who was going to have a fight that night. And so when fighting declined, they were worried that their audiences would decline, but it actually never turned out that way. It actually turned out that they gained some fans, even though there weren't fights anymore.
Greg, do you think most hockey fans are aware of the history of hockey in Alabama? Because you talk at length about it in this article, the Birmingham Bulls of the former World Hockey Association. Do you think many people are aware of how good that team was and the history of hockey in Alabama?
No. I mean, I think a lot of people forget that there was a brief time when Birmingham had a WHA team, a place where guys, I think Rod Langway played there and a few others, Frank Mahovlich played there. I think the thing that people miss with the Alabama bit, though, is how far and wide the Nashville Predators cast their net for their fan base. That's a huge underlying part of this story, is the fact that, Nashville is drawing fans from Kentucky. They're drawing fans from Alabama. In the last 4 or 5 years, they've positioned themselves to really be kind of a regional team, and these teams in Alabama have kind of, you know, borrowed that template from the Predators on how to market the sport. They don't necessarily market hockey. They market the experience of going to a hockey game, and it's a formula that's really worked. And you go to any of these games, whether it's the college team or the minor league teams or whatever, you're going to see a slew of Predators jerseys in these Alabama cities.
So, Greg, since the NHL is such a copycat league, is this something that teams like the Carolina Hurricanes or the Florida Panthers could start to embrace, really kind of recognizing where their fans are coming from?
They should. And also, I think the other thing the Predators have really done well is make a huge investment in youth hockey. I mean, their basis as far as creating new fans is that if you give a kid a stick and a net and a driveway, they're going to, you know, try trick shots. They're going to have a lot of fun with it. And the Predators have actually given away hundreds and hundreds of nets to fans and kids in Tennessee just to get them playing. So I think it's a good template for other teams to follow. But I think what the Predators did and what these Alabama teams did more than anything else is just understand the language of their fan base. I mean, there was a while when the Predators weren't embracing, you know, country music and honky-tonk and all that stuff. And now you go to those games and that's all you see. And I think that once these teams really understand the language of their fan base, and I'm not sure if Carolina, for example, ever really has, I think that's when you really crack the code and start creating new hockey fans.
Greg Wyshynski of ESPN.com is our guest. We're talking about his articles, a series of articles earlier this week on ESPN.com about hockey in Alabama and hockey in the South. And Greg, you know, you mentioned how great of a job the Predators have done, and they certainly have done an incredible job marketing themselves. Is it time for the NHL as a whole to sort of maybe make a focus, not necessarily on big cities in the South, but maybe some of those untapped markets that don't have other professional sports? They're college football towns, and then once the college football season ends, there's a bit of a gap. Is it time for the NHL to maybe make a focus on some of those towns?
Yeah, they really should. And that was sort of the second part of the article. Was I talked to dozens of hockey fans in Alabama to kind of get a sense of what they thought the NHL needed to do better to reach them and reach their audiences. And, you know, the one thing they kept on coming back to is twofold. It's one, being present in those markets. The NHL doesn't really, you know, put its trust in front of those eyes. And there's a lot of hockey fans there that I think if they ever felt that the NHL was inviting them into the tent and catering to them a little bit, that they'd be into it. And, you know, the other thing, too, is again, giving people a chance to play the game and understand the game. Because once you understand the game, obviously, you're going to start watching it on higher levels to see what really, really good players look like when they're playing it. So I think more of an investment in floor hockey, more of an investment in street hockey and things like that. I think the NHL has done a really good job of catering to urban areas when it comes to those sorts of things. But maybe they haven't necessarily made the same kind of outreach to areas like Birmingham, Alabama, that might be, you know, ready to really embrace the league if they were ever given a reason to.
Greg, one of the things that stood out to me in the article is you mentioned Cody Hodgson and the impact that he's had in North Alabama as part of the Little Preds hockey program. Hodgson, of course, was a former member of the Nashville Predators, a former first-round pick of the Vancouver Canucks. But how surprised were you to hear that name? Because he's been out of the NHL for about 3 years now. But how impressed were you to see that he's having an impact there in Alabama as part of that Little Preds program?
Really impressed. It's something the Predators really take pride in, and obviously after his playing days were done, and they were done way before he thought they would be, I think, he really embraced that role as sort of not only someone who works on an organizational level to create those youth programs, but also as an ambassador. I mean, you know, to have an actual former Predator come down to your town and extol the virtues of hockey and the team, I mean, it's got to be impressive to those young players. So, it just speaks to how good Predators are at this thing, right? It's like not only are they catering to fans and selling tickets to fans in Kentucky and Alabama and places like that, but they're also, you know, making investments in those communities to try to create new players and new fans. And again, like it comes back to something that I wrote about actually about a week ago about Spanish language play-by-play announcers in the NHL. There's only three of them. But in talking to them, one of the big things on their plate is representation. And, you know, maybe it takes an Austin Matthews to get a kid in Arizona more into hockey than he was with the Coyotes. And maybe it takes a kid coming from Alabama and making the NHL for a kid in Birmingham or Huntsville to really believe that they could do it too.
So, Greg, when are you expecting Gary Bettman to announce Huntsville as the NHL's 33rd team?
Well, let's see. We're going to get through another round of expansion. I think it all comes down to where the Florida Panthers end up next.
You know, Greg, I might have to give up my Canadian passport with this comment, but I'm someone who enjoys what the Carolina Hurricanes do postgame. I think it's fun. I think they engage their fans with it. Why is it that it's still just not accepted in the NHL? It seems there's a lot of frowning when you know, you hear the establishment NHL guys talking about that postgame celebration.
I don't know, man. It's always going to be a situation where there's a certain decorum and a act like you've been there notion that people expect out of these guys, to which I'd always say, you know, where have the Hurricanes been for the last decade? You know, act like you've been there. They've not even, you know, been to the playoffs hardly in the last decade. So, you know, we just talked about the idea of understanding your fan base and understanding what they want out of it. I think it's sort of the Vegas effect, right? Like, you know, if you create a sense of fun, if you're spending, you know, $100-$200 to bring your family to a game, that you're going to get something out of it, then they're going to come to the game. So I think Tom Dundon understands that intrinsically as the owner of that team. It just hasn't necessarily translated to ultimately success on the ice. But the dude understands. I've talked to him a number of times. Like, dude understands that he's selling a show. You know, he's selling entertainment, and I think that post game celebration just speaks to that.
Greg Wyshynski of ESPN.com is our guest. And Greg, one more question for you. And I apologize. I meant to wear my Kentucky Thoroughblades t-shirt to the show today, but I forgot to put it on out of my closet, unfortunately. But, you know, you have two sort of distinct programs in the South. The University of Alabama Huntsville has a college program that's been around for a while, and Cam Talbot is an alumni of that program. And then you have Arizona State, which has got a Division I program. They're independent in U.S. college hockey.
Go Sun Devils.
Go Sun Devils, apparently. Yeah. How important are those sort of, you know, obviously they're not professional teams, but they're U.S. college hockey, Division I programs. How important are those teams in developing the game and growing the game in those untraditional markets?
I think it's huge, and I think it's growing. And, you know, there are some serious obstacles in the way of those programs, you know, club programs, for example, becoming Division I programs one day. Title IX, for example, I think is one consideration as far as the budgetary concerns. But I mean, you look at all the schools that have thriving club programs. It's most of the California schools, mm-hmm. Schools like Nebraska and places like that. I mean, it's really a situation where hockey is everywhere. It's just not on the level that it needs to be for it to be Division I or 1A or Division II. And there's actually a third team, by the way, in Alabama beyond the two hyphenated college teams. University of Alabama actually has a team called the Frozen Tide. Their jerseys, the Crimson Tide jerseys, and both the sons of Curtis Joseph and Danny Briere play on that team. And they're a club team. So it's kind of a cool little aside to the rest of the growing hockey in Alabama thing, as you get two prominent NHLers having their kids play on a club hockey team in Alabama.
Well, we can, if you can get hockey to be caught on in SEC country, and if it's anything, that would be a quick boon to attendance and to notoriety in some untraditional markets. That's certainly the case. Greg Wyshynski of ESPN.com. Great job on the articles, Greg. Really enjoyed them. Thanks so much for joining us. And let us know post-game what your daughter's soccer Corsi 4 was.
Will do. Thanks.
Thanks, Greg. When we come back, more on the Winnipeg Jets. Are they overusing Connor Hellebuck in net? Is it time for Lauren Brossoit to get some more starts? You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
I thought I played very well. I played good enough to win, and I made some key saves when I needed to. I can't control the fluky tips and the luck that they're getting, but you know, I like to play my flawless game, and if I'm not making a mistake, it's making them get a lucky goal. I think I've done a good job.
Connor Hellebuck, Winnipeg Jets starting netminder.
I love Hellebuck.
He's a really good interview because he's honest as can be, even if sometimes the video might not necessarily back up what you think he's going to say. He certainly is honest, and you can appreciate him for that. I mean, that was after the game against Colorado on Tuesday night, the Jets 7-4 victory, where Hellebuck thought he played a very good game.
I mean, still made what, like 37 saves or something like that.
I mean, Colorado is certainly a team that likes to shoot the puck on net, and there were times I thought where Hellebuck looked a little fish out of the water. But he got the win for the Jets, and his numbers certainly aren't as good this year as they were last year. And if there was a Vezina trophy being handed out on January 12th, he would not be in the running for that trophy, despite the fact he's got a lot of victories this season. You know, Connor Hellebuck is still, for the most part, pretty positive about his game. You know, confidence goes a long way, I suppose. My question for you guys. Mm-hmm. We saw Lauren Brossoit last night. He's been a tremendous netminder for the Jets so far this season. Is it time for the Jets to maybe play Lauren Brossoit a little more and keep Connor Hellebuck fresh?
Yes.
Given that he's on pace to play more games than he did last year when he played 64 games for the Jets.
Right, and the coaching staff is aware of this, guys. And you look at, you know, some of the goaltenders over the past few years that have gone all the way to the Stanley Cup Final, whether that's Braden Holtby, whether that's Marc-Andre Fleury, whether that's Matt Murray. I mean, we talk about this a lot on the show, but gone are the days of Marty Brodeur playing 70, 75 games a year. I think his record was 77 games. I might have to look that up, but I think one year Brodeur played 77 games for the New Jersey Devils.
But those I'm a little surprised you don't have that off the off your fingertips there at Devils fanboy.
Those days, pardon me, Drew, are long gone. You're looking it up right now. So
78 is the most he played in 2006-2007.
There you go.
And he had one season with 77, two seasons with 77, and a number of years with 75. He had three 77
years. Isn't that insane?
Years. That is insane. 1 year with 78, three with 77, and then the majority of the rest of his career was
over 75,
70. Yep. 73, 72, 70. It's insane.
Thank you again to HockeyDB, our best friend.
Seriously, keeps the show alive for yet another season.
And guys, most goalies just don't play that many games ever. But not only do they not play that many games, I mean, most starting goalies are now, Dave, between 60 and 65 games, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I think you can make the argument that once you get past 60, that's even too much. And I don't think Hellebuck is going to keep this pace up, and I think especially with the way Brossoit has played in a backup role, you're going to see him more, and you know the break is obviously going to help for both goaltenders, especially Hellebuck, who's been playing more. But I think the new standard for number one goalies is somewhere in the range of 52 to 57 games. I mean, there's not a magic number, but certainly when you talk about keeping a goaltender fresh for the postseason, I think you absolutely have to start playing Brossoit, especially the final quarter of the season. I don't think you're going to necessarily see Brossoit more, let's say, you know, in January, February, but I think especially when you get into March, as opposed to playing one out of every four games, he's probably going to play two out of every four games.
You know, Mike McIntyre, we've mentioned him a number of times on the show. You might have to get royalties. He wrote a column about Hellebuck and his usage for the Winnipeg Free Press earlier this week. And he mentioned that he believes that Hellebuck ran out of gas in that series against Vegas, and that was part of the reason why the Golden Knights ended up victorious over the Jets.
Yeah, but could you not say that about any goalie that loses? Like,
you probably could, yeah. But I mean,
could you not say that about like Andre Vasilevsky in the East Final?
Theoretically, you could, but Pekka Rinne, who played the fewest number of games of his career last season, as they have the great UC Saros as a backup. I mean, UC Saros isn't great, but he's a pretty good backup.
Yep.
You know, allowed the Predators to use Rinne a little more sparingly. Braden Holtby, who of course won the Stanley Cup with the Washington Capitals last year, played the fewest number of regular season games in his career. Is this something that the Jets, they expect to make a long run into the playoffs? They expect to be playing deep into May or into June, is this something that they need to be taking into consideration, Dave?
The irony, of course, is that you're asking this question after we've gone over a goaltender who's won multiple Stanley Cups playing how many over 70-plus games in his career. So what really has changed in the NHL that a goalie who played 70-plus games numerous years won the Stanley Cup still playing that many games, and now we're in it where we're acting like
it's harder to play goalie nowadays than it was back then because the game is so much faster than it was
when guys shoot harder and the equipment's probably a little bit smaller but anyways there's obviously a number of factors and there's reasons why you would decrease that and we're talking about guys who use goaltenders and we talked about it I think on last week's show how Paul Maurice I think used Archer Zerbe once. I said 70. I was looking at it the other day. I think it was like 76 times once with Carolina. So I think, to your point, Drew, I think as the season condenses for the Jets, they play four in the next six games starting tomorrow against Anaheim. Then they have the holiday break or whatever. I don't know if it's the holiday break, but it's the All-Star break.
Sorry, and they have played 75 and 77 games back-to-back for the Carolina Hurricanes.
Okay. But once that happens, you've got the schedule is going to condense, and you're going to have more back-to-backs, and you're going to have just more instances where you're going to likely see Brossoit play more games. And Coach Maurice has alluded to that a little bit throughout, talking about how as the schedule changes, as the games get a little bit more important, that there'll be the opportunity to kind of get more starts for both goalies.
Dave, if you look at the last four Cup winners,
okay,
so three teams, right? So you've got Chicago, Pittsburgh, and Washington, because Pittsburgh obviously
won twice. Yeah.
So you go back to 2015, Corey Crawford played 58 games.
Okay.
You go back to 2016-17 and 2017-18, Matt Murray played 49 games both years.
Splitting with Marc-Andre Fleury when Fleury was still there, sure.
Yep. And then you go and look at Braden Holtby. You mentioned last year he played more games. He played 54 games. Remember back to 2014-15, he played 73 games. So you're looking at somewhere around 50 to 55 games for all of these four goalies. Three goalies because Murray was in net for both of those Cup wins. So I think you don't want to get too too far past 60 games for Hellebuyck. I mean, I think you want him probably ideally around 55 to 57.
Mm-hmm. Now, Hellebuck's the kind of guy who wants to play every game, as you would probably expect most goalies to want to say that. At some point in time, you need to sort of override what the player wants in this instance and maybe think what's best for him given that, you know, it's January and you expect to be playing for the next, you know, 5 or 6 months. So you look at the Jets' schedule this week, and there's no back-to-backs, mm-hmm. but you have 4 games starting tomorrow afternoon
yep.
in 6 nights. Does Hellebuyck get all these 4 games? I mean, assuming his performance doesn't drop significantly in one of them, or do you see Brossois, sometime between now, tomorrow against Anaheim, and next Saturday where they wrap it up against Dallas before the player break?
Yeah, I would expect to see Brossois in at least one of these games, and you know that kind of goes further to our point where now you're in the second half of the season and you want to start to see Brossois more. So, based on that argument, you probably want to see Brossois 2 out of these 4 games, but I really don't think they're going to increase the amount of games he's getting until somewhere around mid-February to early March. And, you know, some people might say, well, what's the big difference between, you know, Hellebuyck playing 58 games versus 64 games? Well, there's a huge difference. And I think especially when you have a guy like Brossois who is playing so well, and you know that the drop-off is not going to be as significant, right? I think a coach, Drew, would be more hesitant to put their backup goaltender in if he's not confident in them. Brossois is 9-1, and we talked about it. That one loss was coming in relief of Hellebuyck. So Brossois has been really solid. I mean, to me, he's a top-5 backup in the league right now. I mean, UC Saros is probably number one. But, yeah, to your point, they've got Anaheim, Vegas, Nashville, Dallas, and as you mentioned, no back-to-backs. I wouldn't expect to see Brossois tomorrow. Hellebuyck will get the start tomorrow. We just don't see Brossois get back-to-back
right
starts.
There.
I would expect him to probably play one of those 2 games on the road, maybe the game against Dallas before the break. But the point is, when you have a great backup goaltender and you want to make sure that your number one goaltender is as rested as possible, they might need Brossois in the playoffs as well.
Why don't you go Brossois tomorrow then, Dave? I mean, as he says, you don't, and I don't think as he's necessarily wrong. I mean, if you're going to give Brossois one of these next 4 games.
It's just based on precedent. You haven't seen Brossois play 2 games in a row.
Reasonable.
There's no reason to think he will.
I would think that you're going to keep, you still want to keep Hellebuyck in the rhythm. So I think you're going to go back to Hellebuyck tomorrow. You'll probably go back to Hellebuyck on Tuesday against Vegas. I would imagine Brossois gets the Thursday game against Nashville in Nashville, and then you finish with Hellebuyck against Dallas, because then his next game won't be till the 28th. So you're going to give Hellebuyck, you don't want Hellebuyck to have like, you know, two weeks off. So you're going to give him the 19th game, and then you give him the 28th game, and you give Brossois the game against Boston on the 29th, and then to wrap up January, you're going to have Hellebuyck. That would be my prediction.
And I think, Dave, as the season goes on, right, what are the Jets at? 58 points right now, I believe?
58.
Right? So the Jets are going to be somewhere between 115 and 120 points. The Jets are going to be first and second in the Central Division, most likely, right?
They're 8 points up on Dallas, and they still have a game in hand.
Right. Yeah. So as the season progresses, and you get into, you know, games, let's say 65 to 70, mm-hmm. and you know you're going to be one of the top 2 teams in the Central. I really don't think teams in the NHL care about the President's Trophy or winning the Central Division. I really don't. I mean, I think they'd rather have the better playoff positioning. But if you're talking about, you know, towards the end of the season, the last 15 or so games, you know, as opposed to playing Hellebuyck, you know, 10 of 15, maybe you play him 8 of 15 or something like that, just to give him a little bit more rest, keep him fresh. Because you know that you're going to have a favorable playoff matchup, right? So I think that's just something to look at. I mean, Brossois is playing really well, and you know that you're already pretty far ahead of the rest of the teams. Like Dallas and Colorado have fallen behind Nashville and Winnipeg. So again, you don't want to necessarily lose that cushion. That's why we're not talking about, you know, playing Brossois more now. We're talking about playing him more, you know, when you get closer to end of February, early March.
And you're
that
more
type of
locked
thing.
Into right. either the first or the second right. spot in the Central Division. It'll be interesting to see how Paul Maurice deploys it over the next 4 games in 6 nights. When we come back, a team that's having some goaltending controversy is the Columbus Blue Jackets. They had to suspend Sergei Bobrovsky for a night. We'll talk to Blue Jackets analyst Jody Shelley about what's going on in Columbus. And, of course, his former teammate Rick Nash officially announced his retirement. So we'll talk to Jody Shelley about his career with Rick Nash as well. That's up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.